Welcome to the Canadian Tech Podcast, episode 23rd for February the 4th, 2013. My name is Stuart Clark.
I'm Jameson Roberts.
I'm Derek Martin.
Well, gentlemen, another interesting week has passed. It's still cold here in Canada, in London and all that. But we did have some hot news last week from a company just down the road. RIM, or shall we say now they're called BlackBerry.
No more RIM jobs.
No more RIM job jokes. He had to get the last one in there, folks.
Sorry.
Quite a bit of news. But before we start that, I'm actually going to say we have ourselves a new sponsor. And we're actually going to be moving our hosting to them fairly soon, cleverhost.ca. This is from the original team that originally founded Orpheum, Derek Silva. He's back. Cleverhost.ca, definitely worth checking out. Same fanatical customer support, great new hosting. I'm in the process of moving some of my domains over.
I'm going to be doing it shortly.
Yep, and we're going to be moving the Canadian Tech Podcast over probably this week, so there might be a little bit of service interruption. But if you subscribe to us with iTunes or on Castroller, as we always recommend, you won't see any problems there.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, all right, let's get right to it. BB10. Yeah, there's some company launched something new, apparently. It was really fun watching the live stream with some of the fanboys, both Apple and Android. Not that there was anyone in the room here, at least not live.
No, I'm certainly not an Apple fanboy.
No. You were having fun with it during your lunch hour, though. But yeah, there's quite a bit that happened, quite a bit they've launched. I think most people are kind of saying it definitely brings them back into the game. My own opinion, nothing revolutionary.
The CEO certainly said that it brought them back into the game.
Yep.
He was like pushing hard, like with marketer speak, 2 feet thick.
Well, I think the whole thing is it's basically... they've got it. They are betting the farm on this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, very, very much so. Not without its problems. There is a delay on the rollout in the U.S. because of the wireless carriers there. But all in all, people have had a chance to look at the actual unit. The first unit is the one without the physical keyboard, and the one with the physical keyboard is going to come out in April.
Yeah.
Most people, what I read, and most general reviews saying, yeah, it brings them back up to at least within the same relative playing field as Apple and Android and things like that. But there certainly wasn't anything that was like revolutionary.
Right.
Derek, you want to start us off? What were your opinions of it?
Well, I thought the multitasking looked really good because it keeps your apps running, like fully running, and you can sit there and watch up to 8 apps running. It's not like you get like a static preview window, like they're actually running the whole time. But I'm kind of wondering what that is going to do to battery life.
Right. Now, they're touting it being very, very long battery life again.
Really?
And that one of the big things is I know some people like the idea of apparently the real Railroad Warriors, they always had a spare battery, and you can swap the battery out on this phone.
Yeah, I noticed that. The back comes off and like almost falls off and looks pretty cheap. But
yeah,
the idea of being able to swap a battery is kind of nice.
Yeah, it's a lot of the power users. Apparently, that's a lot of them have done. There was some things in review saying it charges very slowly via USB port. But I've often found that depends from machine to machine.
Yep.
Even my own machines at home, depending what port I plug into
for
or whatever,
sure,
will vary that. So I don't really count that. The other thing I found interesting was the whole idea where you can have basically two environments, a business environment,
yep,
and a personal environment. I think they're doing that, obviously. You know, my own opinion, that they're marketing this phone to the people who still believe in the device, in the ecosystem.
Right. Yep.
I don't think you're going to win back a lot of hardcore iPhone people, stuff like that. You might get some people back who had a BlackBerry maybe two years ago, gave it up for an Android device or an mm-hmm. iPhone. But I think it also gives businesses a warm and fuzzy feeling. They can isolate the two. So, again, kudos to them for an interesting concept.
I kind of had a question about how that works, and I don't know if either of you know, but when you swipe between the work profile and the home profile, is that like two partitions? Like, can the data on those two things talk to each other, or is it just like two folders?
Yeah, not sure. I'm going to hopefully James Wilkinson's got a friend. Hopefully we're going to be able to get our hands on a preview unit.
Right.
And again, as the units come out in the next week or two, we'll hopefully get a better idea.
Because if it actually mm-hmm. separates them and you can like lock the business side down
right.
so that people can't install apps on the business side, like and they could have sensitive data there and keep it segregated.
Keep it all segregated,
the home
stuff, yeah.
Then that makes sense, and it's a really cool feature. If it's just like two folders and one's called work and one's called life, then it's
From what I've read so far, and again, I could be completely wrong, but I think it's the first scenario. I think it essentially keeps it two completely separate.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Well, knowing BlackBerry and security, I mean, they're pretty. That's one of the things that for a long time was their bread and butter was their security on their devices. So I can't see them instituting a system where you've got business and personal data commingling unsecurely.
Right.
Yeah. Any other comments, Jameson, on the launch or the product, what you've seen so far?
It brought them up to speed with all of the other makers that it's a rectangle with a glass screen with multi-touch. I think you've hit the nail on the head with you've got to bring the business people back on board because, with bring your own devices, then people are going, well, I'd like to bring my iPhone because I've got that iPhone at home now. But, with this, it hopefully will get them thinking, well, this looks very shiny. So why not use it?
Yeah. I like a quote here on the Globe and Mail's review on the product, which we have in the show notes. And I quote, if you're expecting the latest BlackBerry, the one on which the company had pinned all hopes of survival to be revolutionary, you're going to be disappointed. But the smartphone industry hasn't been truly revolutionary since the first iPhone came out in 2007. And that's basically true. They're very small little things. Basically, in Canada, it's going to go on sale February 6th for about $150 on a 3-year contract. It's already out in the UK. In fact, we've already seen some people on eBay in the UK trying to flog them for $1,000 for those people that, just can't wait in the US or whatever.
Hey, people do that with unlocked iPhones.
There's a reason why.
I joked and suggested it's probably RIM actually putting them on eBay for $1,000.
Yes, I thought that was a markup. It was cute. It's got a 4.2-inch screen, 1280 by 768 resolution. Some people have commented both the display and the camera seem to be a little bit dimmer in a lot of things. It's got an 8 megapixel camera on back and a 2
right
on
par with most other devices. So.
Well, yeah, but like I guess some people are saying it doesn't seem to do well as in low light and the display doesn't seem bright and crisp. But I've heard that from multiple sources. So again, it depends what people like. I know my own iPhone, I turned down the brightness. So,
but it also has a blinking LED indicator. Which no other smartphone has. So well, maybe they do, but
you're just going to go out and buy just on that, aren't you?
Just for the LED.
Just for the LED.
My question though. Yep. Okay, you have this little, trademark LED indicator that BlackBerries are famous for.
Mm-hmm.
It blinks when you have Facebook messages, LinkedIn messages, Twitter messages, or email messages.
Yep.
So my question is, when will that thing not be blinking?
And I read on another podcast, that was one person's concern with the whole message central.
Right.
They say, it works if you only get a few messages here and there. But if you're someone that gets dozens of mentions, replies, and that, it's going to be very hard to manage. Well, exactly, yeah. So I'm sure a lot of people, the first thing they'll do is they'll turn that off or be very selective.
I can't even sleep if there's like a pulsating LED like in the room.
You have to shove it in a drawer just to sleep.
Yeah. He's going to have a blackout curtain for it when he gets his.
Well, now, that being said, do we know if there's a... I feel like I should know this, but do we know if there's a... like what with the iPhone that they just put in with, so you can, turn off all notifications.
I'm sure there's going to be like you can selectively, but I think the default is just like the iPhone, everything's on. So it'll go as well.
Right.
And again, it basically brings it back into the me too.
Right.
So it's basically bringing it back in.
One piece of innovation I thought they had though was with the, two of their gestures. One was a keyboard gesture where you can swipe on the keyboard to like delete a whole word or to show the numbers and extended characters.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome to me.
That I like, yes.
I want to be able to do that.
Their keyboard in general looks really slick.
It does.
The digital keyboard looks really good.
And it looks like they've done and it looks like the whole predictive text algorithm is just as good as Apple.
Yeah, it looks really good.
So they've definitely done well there.
The second one and kind of the more important one to me is the gesture that you do in an arc with your thumb to open the hub, which is where all your messages are aggregated there. So you move your thumb from like the bottom corner up in an arc motion to open this thing.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever you want to look at Facebook messages, LinkedIn, email, or Twitter, you do this arc motion. And I don't know about you, but if you try this motion with your thumb, it feels very tense and unnatural to me.
Okay.
And I think people are going to get RSI issues in their thumbs from that.
But then again, how's it different than the old BlackBerry thumb people used to get years ago?
I remember
7, 8 years ago, people would comment on they'd wear out their thumbs from doing the old two-handed.
Oh, really?
Yeah, many years ago.
To be fair, I mean, with the iPhone, I wish that the slide to unlock was actually the other way, because most of the time I'm holding it in my left hand and going from...
Your left hand?
Yeah.
What, are you crazy?
Yeah.
Yes, he is. Oh, sorry about the phone. Yeah, okay.
if I'm using my iPhone one-handed, it's in my right hand. But if I'm doing two-handed, then I hold it with my left hand and swipe with my right one. So it always works. It feels right to me.
And then I'm even weird. I'm left-handed, but I tend to hold it my right.
Right.
Do that. So it's all
weird. Who knows? Everyone's different. But
it'd be good if you could switch the handedness of it.
Well, yeah. Or, you know, switch. If you could switch the arc maybe on BB10 to the other side so you could do it that way.
Can we do that on the iPhone?
I don't know.
No.
If you want to unlock
with
the
Apple,
iPhone.
It's the way they
made
it. Or, so
part of the thing I kind of chuckled at was I was kind of watching Twitter during the launch, and it's like any other product. You get the fanboys from the other side out, and it was like ugly. You know, it's like some people are just like, you know. So you just got to ignore.
I was kind of tearing them apart. But.
No, you were actually pretty mild compared to most. You were at least attempting to be funny, and you were most of the time. But
saying there were times I wasn't funny?
Yeah. Sadly, yes.
Uh-oh.
But just there was some out there was just like, you know, I haven't seen it yet. Like, give it a chance.
It's a tool
like anything else.
It does look sexy. Like,
yeah. Exactly.
All the transitions and everything look great. The actual physical device looks great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I love, the composition's good. If it forces the other sides to go, maybe we should think about something like this. You're talking about, you know, the one swipe deleting. I agree with you. I'd love for Apple to do something like that. The other good thing is, you know, they've really gone to great lengths to make sure the App Store has some stuff in there.
Mm-hmm. 70,000 apps.
70,000 apps. Now, a lot of people say, oh, that's only a tenth of what, you know, is in the Apple Store. But, you know, really, how many of those apps in the Apple Store are absolute garbage, or
how many of them are downloaded and used on continually?
Exactly. Like, and if you look at, there's apps for every sports team. There's about 7 apps, Toronto Maple Leaf apps alone.
Right.
Multiply that by every team in the NHL, et cetera. Yeah. You know, so it's got some of the big ones. It's got Angry Birds. It's got Evernote. Things like that.
Well, I think you'll probably see more productivity tools on the BlackBerry App Store, which means. Hopefully, they're going to get a little bit more use.
The one thing they went after, they made sure Angry Birds was there.
Well, yeah. I mean, you have to have some games, especially if you're going to put out a touch, like a glass screen like that, that most people are used to playing games on.
I did hear that it's not Gorilla Glass.
Really?
Yeah, it's just glass. So
really?
You might want to be careful putting that in the pocket with the keys.
Oh,
interesting. Okay, yeah. We'll have to see what happens there. You know, as usual, the stock does weird things.
Well, yeah.
So I'm going to ignore that for now. But yeah, I think it's definitely bought them some time. It's definitely brought them back into the game.
Yep.
So yeah, like I said, good luck to them. So I hope it. You know.
Well, and if it also means that you know they can take another stab at a tablet type device with the same operating system. You know, if
Playbook's not good enough for you.
Oh, apparently BB10 did upgrade to the playbooks.
Oh.
So will have that on the playbooks.
Which means
maybe they can check email now.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, but that might be a saving grace. They might be able to at least sell a few more playbooks along with them, or at least not throw them out.
They did feel kind of good in your hand. But
yeah. Well, I know some people that loved it. Again, if it's a tool, if it works for you, then...
Well, that's just it.
You know, exactly. Okay, so let's move on a little bit. We have something, a column here from Paul Thurrott. Microsoft shipped in the wrong order. RT before Pro. I'd like to disagree with Paul right off the bat, and they should not have done RT, but that's just my opinion.
Well, yeah, his thesis or his point, I guess, he said... You know, if they had shipped the Surface Pro first, then people would have gotten used to the idea of the Metro interface, and maybe they would have even started wishing, oh, I wish the desktop wasn't there. I wish it was just pure Metro. And then they could have shipped the RT as, like, a seeming response to that and be like, here you go. It only runs Metro stuff, so don't whine it to us when it doesn't run desktop stuff. Mm-hmm. And then people would have kind of been like, yay. But they did it backwards, and then they were like, okay, here's something that doesn't do everything, and it's all brand new, and you're going to freak out about it. And then, oh, but here's one that's, like, more powerful.
I still remember when they announced this roadmap about 8 or 9 months ago. I remember thinking to myself, yeah, this is going to create a lot of consumer confusion. You know, yes, granted, on the Apple side, we have Mac OS and we have iOS, you know, but they're still different enough. There's some similarities.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And this, by calling it basically the same name, it really had a lot of confusion. We're seeing some initial reports of some of the full-fledged tablets coming out now with Surface Pro, and people are very impressed with it. Yep. The companies have been making a lot, and there's some reasons for that. Right. But yeah, I'm just, you know, I just think it really confuses some people where they see this very limited type device, and it, you know, it looks like their full-fledged PC, and then they discover they can't run apps on it, or specific apps they want. And
I remember during launch week, they had all these pop-up Microsoft stores everywhere selling them, and the staff didn't know the difference between RT and Pro.
There was a real training issue
there.
Couldn't,
they couldn't really, you know, they were selling it to people as if it was regular Windows.
Now, I've started playing with Windows 8. I'm going to be installing it on my, because I believe in dog fooding, just like Microsoft does. And I've got clients who are going to start using it soon. I've been playing with it a little bit in a VM. And as people say, it does seem to perform better. Again, it's only in a VM so far. But there is, there's definitely a learning curve if you don't have a touch screen device.
Yep.
There's definitely some strange things, like trying to find where the shutdown is, for example.
Yes.
Yeah.
Not having that start menu is a big change.
Also, I'm running it in a VM on my Mac so that I can test websites in IE10.
Right.
And if you're not running it full screen, like if you're running it in a window, then all the gestures are cumbersome, like with a mouse.
Right.
Because they're all based on putting your mouse near the corner of the edge of the screen.
I've noticed that, yes.
And you're like, it's so easy just to go out. But when it's full screen, then you just go over to the edge of the monitor and it's all good.
But I have heard some people's opinions I trust. You know, they're saying performance-wise, if you have recent gear, it runs very well. Yep. It runs better than 7.
It is pretty zippy.
And even like the Surface RTs, they do run well. Mm-hmm. I've played with one. A friend of mine who has one said that he spent almost 5 hours unplugged on Skype.
No, that's, you know, and again, if
running
it meets
video
your needs,
full screen.
Yep, if it meets your needs and it has the use, exactly. I really like the premise of what you can do with, like, you know, in terms of the tablet, particularly some of the ones, you know, Lenovo's got some ones now where, you know, the screen is actually the battery and the CPU, so you can undock the screen from the keyboard. And it's still running 8, like right there. We talked about that last show, the show before.
Yep.
So hopefully we'll get a chance to play with that a little bit more. So, you know, it'll be interesting. My opinion of the product, it's improved a little bit since I first was reading some of the things. So, and again, we always have to remember that change is difficult for anyone. I remember people going from Windows 3 to Windows 95. And I'm hearing a lot of similar comments now as I'm hearing way back then. So
I think Windows should have, though, completely gotten rid of the desktop, just said everything is gone. And I think it would have...
I think so, too.
I think it would have resulted in less confusion because everyone would have gone, oh, there is nowhere to stop. This is what the computer
is. I think it will be interesting. And I think Microsoft, they won't admit it, but I think they know that, for example, business is not going to go to this.
Right.
They'll wait for the next version, whether it's, you know, because they have to adapt too. They have to change and adapt. Mm-hmm. Most businesses are just in the process of either finishing going to 7 or going to 7 from XP.
Yeah.
And it's a real radical change. Now, at the same time, I can see a lot of businesses liking this because I know when I was working in the corporate world, you know, we ran very few apps. So you could just deploy what you need. You know, have a hot screen with displaying what there is and away you go. But it's going to take some time for them.
The other thing is, I think, like, I want to say that they should have gone Metro only, but in my limited experience with the VMs, I find it very difficult to multitask in there. Like, you want to be unitasking. Like, it's kind of like the iPad that way. And so if you're using it in a business environment, that sucks.
Yeah, I know.
For consumers and people at home and students even, maybe, it's great.
And that's where I think they should have... If they're going to have a desktop, they basically have a business line for businesses so that they can do that type of multitasking. But for the average consumer, they're not going to notice the desktop not being there.
As long as they can access what they need.
Exactly.
They need to.
Email, web browser.
But you also, you also have to give that option to the more power users.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But, you know, if they're going to delineate things, it should have been, you know, RT is for the average consumer, no desktop. Mm-hmm. Pro has is a more fully fledged, or, you know, the full version with the desktop.
But I think the problem then is that, for example, let's say you're using the RT version. Someone comes to you and says, oh, I could use this great, great new thing called Evernote, this great new app, and there's a desktop app, and they try and run it, and there's no desktop app for it,
right? Mm-hmm.
Then it runs it. And again, that comes back to the confusion, I think.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens ahead. Like I said, the Surface Pro is just coming out this week and next.
Yeah.
When does it actually come out? It comes out on the 9th. So.
I hope it works out, but it could be a train wreck.
Yeah, we'll have to see what happens. But again, the nature of computing is changing. Yeah. One of the things I found in like Windows 8, they really even more than ever hide a lot of things, you know, options. Like if I want to map a drive, you know, it's there, but it's in an area. It's the way to get to is when I don't do it. Like it's one of the three options,
right?
But it's completely in a different area. And again, part of that is just a learning curve. But I also want, you know, in my, there should be a way you could flip a switch and turn that on. How about a classic mode? Now, there's already providers.
Like the control panel in previous Windows, right? Yeah. You can say, no, just show me everything. Don't group it in categories.
Yeah. Now, there is already some apps out there that will bring you back that classic mode. You can have your start menu, stuff like that. So I can see, as I said, I've just started playing with it. I've only been a couple of hours. I played with the developer preview first originally. But, yeah, like just things like, as I said, running in a VM, trying to map a drive.
Yeah.
I found it was like a lot more difficult than I expected.
Mm-hmm. I also thought it was weird how some of the control panel settings are only available in the Metro control panel or only available in the desktop control panel.
And again, you know, I'm keeping some notes because I just want to kind of figure, okay, maybe it's something I'm missing.
Maybe there's a piece of logic that makes it
make sense to you, right? And what I think it was is I know when Office went to the whole ribbon UI, that took a bit of getting used to, but frankly, I like it better now. Everything is grouped logically now. Right. It makes better sense. And you can see some of that in the UI now.
Right.
Maybe it's just the
same
learning curve. Yeah, probably.
Who designed
them. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, for me, the jury's still out. I'm not going to say, oh, no, this sucks because of this. But I'm, you know, I'm looking at it with a more open mind. Performance-wise, I'm impressed.
Right.
With ruts running. So, you know, we're going to have to see what happens. And whether we like it or not, you know, stuff's going to come out with it.
Yep.
You know, people aren't going to be able, you know, you can't get XP anymore. People are going to, you know, be going to it from 7.
Although I did find it funny, there was a thing on Gizmodo about people were selling Windows 7 downgrades.
Yeah.
That's very similar to when Vista came out.
Well, yeah, exactly.
XP, so, yeah, I'm not surprised at that. And I still think you're going to be having a lot of people running 7 on it.
Oh, yeah.
My official story, though, is that I've never touched Windows 8 and I don't know how to fix your computer.
There you go. Okay, so just remember that, folks.
Yep.
Don't give Derek a call.
No, but give Stuart a call.
There you go. I once I learned it, yeah.
I'll forward the email to you,
and we'll start downgrading. The other reason I jumped on it is because their original intro pricing for the upgrade, it went up.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was $40. Now it's like in the hundreds, which kind of sucks.
140 or something.
Yeah, yeah. So I always try and get a legal license. I just wish it would apply to multiple VMs. But that's another story. So, all right, where are we now? Let's see here. We got that. Okay, Apple takes U.S. mobile phone sales from Samsung. This is in the last quarter, I believe, of 2012.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, part of that you can say because the 5 was out.
Well, and people were holding, if you watch the trends of people buying phones, you know, when it was getting close and everyone knew it was going to come out, you know, all of the iPhone sales practically turned to zero.
A lot of pent up demand.
Exactly.
Yeah. They jumped from 26% to 34%, which I guess they're saying it made Samsung's go down from 32.3 to 31.8, which is not a big downslope.
And it'll be interesting to see also what happens this year as well, because, you know, RIM's released new product.
Win 8 phones.
Win 8, yep. They have to be a part. So, you know, are we going to see four players in the market?
I think that's going to be
two smaller players.
The interesting struggle, or the interesting thing to watch is going to be Windows Phone versus BlackBerry.
Now, I have a friend of mine who does have a Windows 20 of the previous one, and he upgraded to the new one, and he loves it for what he does. It works great for me.
He upgraded to a Windows Phone 8 or to the 7.8?
Well, he had the previous version, and then he went to Windows Phone 8.
Okay.
And, yeah, he's the only one I know who has one. But for what he does, he loves it. It allows him to sync what he needs to sync. He loves SkyDrive. And, again, if it does what you need to do.
It does look good. Yeah. I like the look of it now.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of integration. Like, how is SkyDrive much different than Apple's iCloud?
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's what you have to look at. You know, for me, it's just I don't need another, you know, another service. That's why I tend to use Dropbox for everything. I don't even use iCloud because I run a mix. I run a mix of PC and Mac. So, you know, and again, it's an interesting option. Even with the Windows 8, you can tie it to your Hotmail account, but you don't have to. So, like, the one I'm playing with right now is in my VM. I haven't tied it. It's just too much of a hassle. I don't need that. I don't use SkyDrive, and I'll download the Dropbox plugin, and I can sync it that way. So it'll be interesting ahead, as you say, with the I think we're going to see four players. I think it'll be too big, too small.
It'd be nice to see four players because
competition's good.
A two player horse would be a bit dull, especially if nothing sort of innovative comes out. If it's just kind of stalled.
It was interesting that Apple's market share went up 8%, but Samsung's only went down about 1%. So they actually stole 7% from somebody else.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was from Android or who it's from, but it's kind of one of those the rich are getting richer, the poor are getting poorer situations.
Yep.
The big four are just getting huge.
Yep. And again, you know, this is just in North America. You know, if you look around the world, Apple is much smaller market share.
Yeah.
A lot of people in Europe like the Android phones and stuff like that. Symbian still is a big player.
And BlackBerry is larger in other places in the world as well.
In the third world as well. Yeah, not third world, you know, but elsewhere. Exactly.
Thorsten Hines would kill you for saying.
Yes.
I know, the third world. I know. Well, he hasn't hired me, so, you know, I don't really have to worry about
but they did have their live launch. You know, they had
Dubai, all over the place. Dubai, South Africa. Yeah, like they're worldwide. You know, they're really, you know, and it was a worldwide, you know, release. And it was in the UK first. It wasn't in North America first.
Yep.
You know, so it was interesting to see that. So, yeah, no, I wish them the best. Okay, moving on. This is, I think, Derek, this is your story. Apple Mac Pro discontinued in Europe.
Yeah.
Are we going to be seeing, like millions of French designers and graphic people screaming in horror?
Well, they can get them for the next month before sales are ceased. And I think they ran into something with the EU upped their safety requirements for computers. And, like, if you try really hard, you can shove your finger into the fan of a Mac Pro. So
you really
have some weird legislation, let me tell you.
You really have to want to lose that finger.
Yeah.
But about a year and a half ago, Tim Cook was in an interview. He's the CEO of Apple, for those who don't know. And he said, people were saying, oh, when is a new Mac Pro going to come out? And he said, well, in, mid-2013, we'll have something for the Mac Pro people. He didn't say we're going to have a new Mac Pro. He said we're going to have something for the Mac Pro people. So that, combined with this discontinuation of Mac Pros in Europe, makes me think that, they're discontinuing it because this new thing is coming and it's going to meet the safety standards.
Yeah. Do you think Apple believes the desktop computer's dead?
I think Steve Jobs said it before he died. Basically, desktops are like trucks. Laptops and post PCs are, well, even laptops. Desktops and laptops are like trucks, and iPads and iPhones are like cars. You know, most people don't need a truck anymore.
Right.
Yep.
Right. But for those that do, again, you know, on some of those Mac Pros, there's some, you know, they run some serious horsepower.
If you're going to renovate your kitchen, you don't want a Kia.
Right.
Like a little two-door Fiesta, whatever.
Exactly. Yep. You want something bigger. So hopefully we'll hear something soon.
It'll be interesting to see what they do bring to the table, especially with, you know, the changes that they did to the iMac, even though a lot of them were cosmetic. But, I mean, if they bring out a Mac Pro that could support video-wise Retina quality displays.
Yep. Do you want to hear my crazy, weird, off-the-wall prediction?
Sure.
Go for it.
That they've got right now, Thunderbolt works. It's on copper, but it was originally designed to work on optical.
Yep.
So my theory is that they've got the optical working, which is like 10 times faster than the copper-based one, which is 10 gigabits.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to be able to stack multiple Mac Minis together. And you want more power, you just slap another Mac Mini on top of the stack.
Or Ooh. Have something like an enclosure yeah. and you just plug them in.
Yeah,
I think if they like now, if they do Thunderbolt that way, that would also solve the problem of being able to get, you know, 27-inch cinema displays running Retina.
Absolutely.
That,
yeah,
that's been the real limit. You know, and this yep. is when the Retina MacBook Pro came out, you know, people saying this is going to be great. Because, you know, for a lot of people, yeah, they have their laptop to go. And like, if my gaming PC at home ever dies, I'm going to have to really think. Because, yeah, half the time when I'm using this Mac at home, I plug it into an external monitor. I'm good to go.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But that was the limitation. You know, if you couldn't have a 30-inch cinema display running Retina, there's just yep. you couldn't drive the right. pixels.
And this way, you would just add a couple more GPUs by adding a couple more full units.
And then you just plug in. Well,
and scales your RAM, your CPU,
and more
your
importantly, you can
time.
External. You can have an external Retina display monitor.
Right.
Plus, you don't have. Plus, you then don't have to spend the farm. You can spend it over time.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I can see something like that. I mean, you know, we've talked about before, and they have, you know, we haven't seen a lot on Thunderbolt accessories.
Oh, they've been slow to market.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things I always thought was cool what they were talking about is, like, for example, with my own MacBook Pro here, I've got just a basic Intel graphic display.
Yep.
You know, and that's great. When I'm on the road, mobile and that, I don't need that.
Right.
But it would be nice to be able to go home, plug it into a, you know, to my big monitor and then have a Thunderbolt plug-in 3D card.
Because you're a gamer, right?
So I could mm-hmm. game it. Exactly. Yeah. That's the one limitation. So
see, I'm also wondering if they've gotten the optical working, if they're going to put out, because rumblings were coming through from Intel that coming down the pipe were going to be CPUs that were no longer, you can no longer swap them out.
Right.
So I'm wondering if they've maybe gotten advanced stuff from Intel.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also wondering if they're doing away with the traditional motherboard. Because if they've right. got Thunderbolt working optically.
Could be all optical interconnects. Right?
Exactly. Yep.
And that performance would be ridiculous.
The performance mm-hmm. would be through the roof.
And that would fit well for the MacBook Pro.
And low heat, actually. People.
Yeah.
Low heat.
Low heat.
Handy for those Final Cut and rendering people.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's what the Mac Pro has always been geared towards. It's been geared towards the video, audio heads, and, you know, those who need serious amounts of processing. So if you've got a system that can handle that type of bandwidth and is low heat and also scalable.
Mac Mini Colo would be rolling around.
Oh, yeah.
Having a fun time.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. You know, need 10 times less servers.
Well, you know, and again, so what we should do is make a note of that, gentlemen, of each of your predictions. And, you know, hopefully in a few months, one of you or both of you can say, yes, I was right.
Exactly.
No, it makes a lot of sense. Okay, moving on. I'm going to skip over the next story just because we're going to stay on the Mac thing for a minute. There was a brand new bug discovered. Newly discovered bug. I saw Mr. John Pylon this morning.
I think he was trying to trick people.
Yeah, I know. He tweeted out this thing. Oh, yeah. Go, if you have OS 10 Mountain Lion, go ahead and go file:// yeah. I didn't because I knew something was up.
Yeah.
So I read about this. But, yeah, apparently.
It's bad.
Yeah, apparently this will crash majority just by going to.
Just by typing a certain number of characters or a certain sequence of characters, you can crash almost any program.
Now, is this in the command line or this is anywhere?
No, it's in like text editors.
Really?
That's what's shocking about it
wow.
to me. Like, is the OS parsing your text at some level then?
Yeah, exactly.
If typing that
that's
in,
what, I'm, that's what I'm starting to wonder.
Well, especially, I mean, if you're a lot of applications, you can type in hyperlinks and in a split second, yep. it will flag yep. it as a hyperlink and things like that. So it's got to be doing some kind
so,
of parsing.
So you know what? Here's my next thing. How are all these journalists typing this in if they all use Macs? As soon as they type the
you
app,
just blew my
it crash?
Mind.
There you go. Excellent, excellent. So not every app does it. Or these guys are lying. They've been using PCs the whole time.
Well, not all journalists have good taste.
Well, there you go. but yeah, interesting thing. So yeah, if you're running the latest version of Apple's operating system, kids, don't type file://
How much you want to bet there's going to be a hot patch within a week?
Oh, yeah, if not sooner.
Well, there's been two Java hot patches this week.
So that's yeah, true.
More and more I'm disabling Java, even like everyone's recommending.
Yeah,
this actually came from Open Radar, and he talks about text edit. And he says crashing and spell check, he thinks. So this will be interesting to see. And ignore anything Pylon says unless he has a little bit more explanation behind it.
Well, I wonder if they are throwing in a lot of sort of parsing of the text you're doing, you know, gearing towards Siri or...
They call them data detectors.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you know, think about how much automation happens with spell checking in multiple different programs, you know.
Someone says here, do it in Spotlight and your entire menu bar goes out for a second. yeah, it only affects Mountain Lion. But again, they've said here it'll crash Google Chrome, Safari, Simultron, Text Edit. If you create a new product in Xcode and then add, and you probably know what this is, Derek, NST Text View in it, run the project and write file in Text View, your application will crash. So there you go.
Wow. Good times.
Yep. So yeah, I'm sure we'll see a patch fairly quickly. So in the meantime, don't do that. Okay, next story, which is going back one. There was some sort of superb owl or some sort of sporting event on yesterday involving a ball and two teams. And
the guy, one guy kicked it and the other guy caught it and then he ran and then some people clapped.
And then all the lights went out.
Yeah, you know, obviously we're talking about the Super Bowl. None of us here are real football fans. I like the one tweet meme that was going around. They had superb owl and take pictures of superb owl instead.
It was good.
But during the game, there was they had a blackout. The power went out to lower lights for about half an hour during the third quarter. And kudos to Oreo. Their social media team jumped right on that. And they actually had, within a few minutes, they had a tweet out with a photo saying you can still dunk in the dark. And that's just, I thought that was brilliant.
That is awesome.
Absolutely brilliant. And it just, you know.
That's a marketing team thinking on their feet.
Well, it's marketing team. They've got permission from the ad team. And exactly. They were there. It was an awesome, awesome, good idea.
Of course, we didn't get that ad in Canada.
No. Well, it was actually a tweet. And then a few of the other companies picked up on it. Tide actually did one a little bit later on as well. Right. But, you know, again, lots of multi-million dollar ads. One of the things I like now is I don't have to watch the game to watch the ads now. I can just grab
YouTube.
They were on YouTube the day before, most of them.
I noticed that. That was weird.
Yeah. So that was that was kind of interesting. The other thing, too, that happened, I was listening to Leo Laporte's This Week in Tech podcast, and Leo was down at the Superdome. They actually set up Wi-Fi there.
To cover 30,000 people.
Yeah, 30,000 connections. It was mixed results, but you know, it was interesting to see how they do that.
That's a lot of antennas.
I thought it was interesting that the Superdome, you know, that's where they housed people when the hurricane hit New Orleans, right?
And then they had to spend millions rebuilding it.
So I would have thought that they had backup power at this point.
Yeah, I know. Apparently it was something to do with, from what I read so far today, something detected a problem and it automatically shuts down. There was like an alarm condition or something. So it wasn't really a case of the power went.
Right.
There was a piece of equipment failed and that tripped something. So,
of course.
Yeah. Murphy's Law, right?
Good old Hughes.
I saw a really good tweet too. It was like someone in New Orleans said, "Oh, now you all care about New Orleans infrastructure."
Yeah. It was, you know, it's obviously a bit of an embarrassment. You feel bad for New Orleans doing that. But
yeah.
To their credit, though, I did see a tweet, you know, while this was all happening saying, the power providers say there's nothing wrong on their end. It's not an infrastructure problem.
Right.
So.
Yeah, apparently it was something to do with a piece of equipment inside, switching, something like that.
Right.
And then it caused a bit of a cascade. That's all we know so far from today. But no, I guess it was a big success. Lots of big stats on how many billions of cases of beer and billions of chicken wings they eaten and stuff like that.
There were some conspiracy theories too, like people saying, you know, it was the snack vendors who pulled the power plug. You know,
because I thought it might be the San Francisco fans, you know, because they came back. It came close.
They did.
Became an interesting game. Alas, the 49ers did not win. So, but there we go. Okay, moving on. Back to Canada here. We had some tech news early last week. Best Buy in Canada closed a pile of stores and Future Shop, both the same company. But anyway, there's a pile of stores closed. And
15 locations.
I had to kind of chuckle because half the news reports were saying, oh, it's all the fault of showrooming. And for those who don't know, showrooming is when you go in to a store like a Best Buy or any brick and mortar store. Mm-hmm. You check out the product, you maybe bug the salesperson, and then you don't buy it there, but you go out and order it online.
For cheaper.
For cheaper. Okay, first of all, to business owners, that's going to happen. It's happened before.
Yep.
They just called it something different. You're always
they would have just gone to a discount store in the past.
You're always going to get cheapskates. That's going to happen. The big thing here is, and you know, I always remember my wife a few years ago. She commented on this when all these big box stores were going in these like power centers and stuff like that. We were getting away from the malls. Mm-hmm. You know, my wife says, "What's going to happen in like 20 years when we're all much much older? We're not going to want to schlep into a car from one store to another. We're going to go back to the mall concept."
Right. Or well, and also
traditional downtown.
A lot of you know. If you take a look at the millennials, you know, Derek, you and I, mm-hmm. there are a lot of people, I'm included in this, that don't have a car and or want a car, which means that, you know, the big spread out smart centers and things like that are not, I never go there because they're not conducive for me shopping.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think a lot of it's too, is you can also, you know, you can blame online to a point because a lot mm-hmm. more people, our consumers, are becoming more savvy.
And with Amazon doing stuff like same-day delivery in the States now, like...
We're seeing what's going to happen here.
And in Toronto, or at least yep. it's close. And, like, really? It's,
I
it's
think
close
they have one day in Toronto.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they got a new distribution center there. I think in Vancouver as well. That's where the other one is. But yeah, it's you know, you're in a changed retail landscape. And guess what? You're either going to have to compete on low price, but the consumer is much more informed now. Mm-hmm. And where one of the models these big box stores traditionally were making money was with the accessories, cables and stuff like that. And we all know now, most consumers now are smart enough that they know not to buy a $140 monster HDMI cable.
Right.
They can go down to their dollar store or buy like a $20 cable or whatever.
Or monoprice.com or DX.com.
Exactly. There's all these different things. So I think that's part of it. Part of it to me is also the experience when you go in. Before 4 years ago, you used to have trained staff who knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
But thanks to the cost cutting, these employers now, they hire people and they don't give them training. So when you ask them a question, they look at the side of the box, you know, because
no,
they don't know either.
Not all of them.
No,
there are some smart
and
people.
Like anything else, exactly. But I just find generally, and, you know, and I was reading some of the comments from people with some of the stories, and a lot of them, they say they get tired of going into one or the other and getting hassled about, oh, you should buy the service plan.
Right.
And things like that. And, you know, I can see that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, this doesn't surprise me. And also what's curious is the source actually announced they were going to open an additional 20 or 50 smaller stores. Just after this announcement. Now, again, the
really?
Source, I know, apparently. The last time I went in the source, I wasn't impressed. But even Best Buy says, yeah, we have to look at a smaller footprint because you don't need these things
stuffed
to the brim with stock that's not going to move,
yeah.
gathering dust, you know. And, again, my own opinion is I do like shopping local.
Yep.
You know, and if I go into a store, I went to two good stores today, I got some great service, I don't mind paying a few bucks more. Where I have a problem is if it's blatantly way over. One of the big things actually, and again, people were commenting on this in Best Buy, is that Best Buy online mm-hmm. never matched the prices in the store. So mm-hmm. people would go to the online website, oh, that's cool, and then they'd look up store stock, go down, and they'd be charging for a higher
weird.
Price. I know Chapters did that, and Chapters lost a lot of my business one year for that reason, because I didn't need the books right away.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted $15 more for one particular mm-hmm. title,
right?
You know, and fine, I'll order it from Amazon.
Or Chapters, I find it funny when one book website is way more expensive than Amazon.
Oh, yeah.
Like, because what's the barrier? You
yep,
check
exactly.
Chapters, then you check Amazon. Which one's cheaper, you buy it.
Well, and this is what it comes down to. What I think what annoys a lot of people is, you know, and they have it in the fine print that the online isn't the same as the thing, but that annoys people. People see a common brand. They see Chapters online.
Right.
They see Chapters in the thing.
Right.
They even go
so far to say, oh, check store stock. And it shows in stock and you schlep down there.
Right.
And then they want to charge you more. Like, you know, no wonder it's a turnoff. So,
and it's not real time. Sometimes I've slept down there and they're like, oh, we haven't updated our system yet. We don't actually have it.
You know, and there's a lot of, you know, this is where I talk about what goes around comes around. The smaller consumer with the smaller footprint, like the Tiger Direct's Canada Computers,
mm-hmm.
you know, for example, are two stores in town I will send people to.
Mm-hmm.
I won't send them to a Best Buy or a Future Shop because the staff is usually better.
Yeah.
The pricing's usually better. And the selection's good. Now, I wouldn't want to be a retail in this modern landscape. Yes, you've
right.
got brick and mortar. It's a tough sell. As I've told people before, you can either go on price, but that's very difficult now with the Walmarts and the Targets of the world, or you go on a quality customer experience, a wow experience. And that's how Apple does it.
That's exactly what gets me, you know, to go to the Apple store. I online shop whenever I can, but if I want something Apple, I go to the store because I know that the people there are super informed. They're super well trained. And they just get you in and out as fast as they can. And it's
They make it's an experience. It's interesting too how a local store just went out of business this month, mostly digital.
They're switching over to online presence only.
Yeah, so they're basically getting out of the brick and mortar operation.
Really?
Now their main store was here in London. They've got a couple of other ones.
Out at Wonderland in Oxford.
Yep. But there had also been some comments how the service has been, you know, from some people have been going down a little bit the last few years. Where, you know, and you also wonder how much of that did the Mac store take, the Apple store. I know myself, I bought my Fujitsu scanner there a couple of years ago, and I had no problem. But when it came time for me to get my Apple TV, I know it's going to be the same price, and the Apple store happened to be closer.
Yeah.
You know, but then you've got other places, like mostly Mac, they're still doing gangbusters because, again, they offer something a little bit different.
Right.
It's service. So, yeah, it's a very interesting new landscape. I really hate when people saying, oh, it's all people showrooming, because that's not the case.
Mm-hmm.
It's a combination. You know, you're always, like I say, you're always going to have some cheap buggers. That'll no matter what. But if I was a business, I wouldn't worry about that. I'm not going to try and chase after those people. It's not worth my time.
Yep.
You know, go for the quality. And you look at any of the comments here, I hope, you know, and it's not going to happen, but I hope Best Buy executives and that are looking at that. But the problem is they look at just the bottom line, the bean counter. How can we squeeze more profit out? And that's the problem when you've got staff getting fired or reprimanded because they're not selling enough service plans.
Right.
Customer experience, then.
Especially considering the, you know, they make pennies on stuff like television sales.
That's the problem. That's the problem they have now. You know, they're making, you know, the stuff that's occupying most of the space, the square footage, is they're making the least profit. Where before, yeah, they could get some of it back by the service plans, the cables, the accessories. Mm-hmm. But guess what? The consumer is smarter now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not going to fall for that.
The Wirecutter is a website that I've grown to love. It's thewirecutter.com, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And their shtick is they only list the best things for each category on the site. So if you go to TVs, it's like best overall TV, which is the most expensive, then best one for $500,
mm-hmm.
best one for like $250. You know, if they were a physical store, they would only have three TVs on display.
Yep.
But they'd be good products.
But you would know. Whatever TVs they have are the ones I want.
Oh, yeah. Right? Just looking at the site now. Yeah, exactly. And that's what it comes down to. There's also a lot of studies about we almost have too much selection now. So there's been books written about it, you know, paralysis and stuff like that. But, yeah, it's true. So, yeah, it's a tough time to be a brick-and-mortar operation. That's why, you know, Sears reported layoffs, too, last week. But, yeah, I think the only way now is because you've got, like I said, you've got the Dollaramas and the Walmarts and whatnot beating you on price. The only way to really last, you've got to specialize and you've got to give that wow experience like the Apple store does, like other places that get
Henry's, let's say.
I've heard good things even about the Microsoft stores that, you know, the not the pop-up stores, but the actual physical stores.
Right.
They're treating it the same way Apple is, that when you go in there, the people know the equipment, they know their stuff, and they're going to help you out the best way possible.
Good.
Yeah, and that's what it takes. And again, you're not going to get every customer, but a lot of people will stick with you if it's a few bucks more. You know,
or even if it's the same as like your online price.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, you usually, like I said, I have no problem because I understand someone's got to pay the staff, the hydro bill. I have no problem paying a few bucks more. The problem I have is when it's like an item that online the company wants to sell me for 25, and if I go to their brick and mortar store, they want 35.
Mm-hmm.
That I have a problem with. You know, if that's the case, raise the price of the online item a bit, lower the price of the in store, or ideally, make them the same.
Yep.
You know, definitely. Okay, there's my shopping rant for the week. Done. Actually, it ties in nicely to this one that Derek actually tweeted earlier today. Monoprice. We're just talking about them. I learned a few more things on this from this article you posted, Derek. I didn't realize they were in the States. I thought it was straight from China.
Yeah, I think their stuff is manufactured in China, but their business is based.
It's all in the
US.
States. Yeah, I never realized that before. Yeah, I bought cables from them before. They have great stuff.
Absolutely.
Some of it. And they're looking at now expanding into big box electronics.
Yep.
So I think your tweet today was talking about like a big monitor that would be, what, $1,000? And they
a 27-inch.
$1,000 Apple cinema display, 27-inch. The same ones that are in the 27-inch IMAX. You can get it. It's actually from the same manufacturer.
Yeah, here we go.
And you can get it for $400.
Yep. Yep. You know, and again, it'll carry the model price brand.
That's pretty killer.
Yeah.
Yep. They launched a GoPro style action cam for about $90.
Yep.
Yeah. Almost all, I love this quote, almost overnight mono price willed a consumer electronics brand into existence. And as they say here, the head of, CEO says they credit their rise to one thing, cables.
Yep.
HDMI cables, just what we were talking about.
Yep.
Well, and in the article, they even said that the CEO, they don't pick a product, based on it complementing their other products. It's whatever is going to turn them the largest profit.
Right.
Yep. And again, if there's something in, again, it's a tough industry because, yeah, it's essentially widgets, and a lot of the times, yeah, you're getting the same thing made out of the same factory. They're just slapping a brand name on and they are charging more.
My buddy was looking for some new headphones a little while ago, and I kept trying to push him to get the Bose Quiet Comfort 15, like $300 noise-canceling headphones.
Mm-hmm. The ones you can take on a plane and not hear a thing?
Yeah, I saved up, I was saving up, but then my wife got them for me last Christmas. That was my big thing. And I love them. But anyway, my buddy was like, nah, I don't want to, I just want some cheap headphones. So I was like, oh, I wonder if Monoprice has headphones. And I searched, and they had these ones called premium over-ear DJ headphones, which look like, big cans that you put on your ears. And they were $23 on sale for $20.
Yep.
So he ordered them, and he's like, yeah, they sound really good. And so I went over to his house and tried them, and there was almost no difference between them and my Bose headphones.
Maybe a true audiophile would tell the difference.
Except that mine had noise canceling.
Yeah.
But
the actual bass response was there. The treble was there. The mids were there.
Yep.
I was like, holy crap. For $23,
My
next headphones will be Monoprice.
Now, to be fair, sort of counter argument, my wife just picked up a pair of Sennheiser headphones from Best Buy. Mm-hmm. They're $50. But they sound almost, they sound almost as good as the professional grade ones that I bought for my studio stuff.
Yep.
And so I think this is, that would be an example of the company Sennheiser, doing the same type of thing where they're putting out a product that's, equal, but the consumer can lap up no problem.
Yeah. Yep.
But I think more and more people are aware of Monoprice and some of these other things. Like we talked to Best Buy and Future Show. I wouldn't buy a hard drive in Best Buy or Future Show.
God, no.
You're going to pay 30% more than Canada Computers down the road.
Yep.
Things like that. Like actually Monoprice.
The only reason why I'll buy one there is because I know I'll get a price matched and I'll get the Best Buy points.
If you're lucky and they agree to price match quite often. Again, they make the experience difficult. The more friction you put in a shopping experience, the more people will go. I'm actually looking at Monoprice because we recently cut our cable, so I just want to get a little HD antenna. They have an HD antenna here for like, $16.
Right.
Even if it doesn't work perfectly, for $16, I'm willing to try it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the Dollarama of electronic components. This is where I always think it's funny places like The Source and that stay in business at times because I've gone to The Source. I was looking for an optical cable, actually, or an optical audio cable, that particular type, when I was doing this upgrade. And I needed one about, 4 or 5 feet, not a terribly long one. Well, I go into The Source, and all they have was like a 10-foot one, and you could tell they weren't that interested. I think they make their money on if last minute you discover you don't have a cable, you're doing a presentation. Mm-hmm. That and cell phones. I don't know how they stay in business, but apparently they're popular enough that they're opening a bunch more stores as well.
So. Well, and if they open up, in areas where people can, foot traffic.
Well, I guess that's what it is. They sell, cell phone cases and stuff like that. But I think the important thing to remember is the consumer is much more informed now.
Yeah.
Definitely. We're seeing that. People aren't going to get suckered in, hopefully, as much.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot less. Yeah, you're not going to hopefully see the scam where, these $150 cables, they make all the difference. You're talking about with your buddy.
Yep.
Exactly. I think we're going to see a lot different there. And I don't think the Best Buy thing is going to be the only casualty this year of the retail landscape. As we have other businesses come in, people have to adapt.
I went, we're renovating our bathroom, which is the original 1965 bathroom.
There you go.
Everything in it is bubblegum pink. the toilet, the vanity, the tile on the wall, the bathtub.
It's Don't tell my wife, she'll get ideas.
Solid bubblegum pink. Anyway, I was looking at like Rona and Home Depot and Lowe's and everything for stuff for the room. And I'd heard that Cops Buildall had some really great vanities and stuff.
Yep. They so do a good local London, Ontario business.
Yeah, up on Dundas East.
Yep.
So I went to their website, Cops Buildall, and I searched vanities. And guess what I got back? I'm not shitting you.
You got pink vanities?
No. The search result was text listings with the names of the vanities.
Oh, dear.
No images.
Yep.
No click-through for more information.
Yep.
And a price. So it was a piece of text and a price.
Yeah, there's an
example. You couldn't see anything. Yep. I was like, oh, my God. Is this 1950? What are you doing?
And this is an example where I tell, you know, when I do some consulting for small businesses, I advise them. I say, how much did you spend on your Yellow Page ad last year? Take that Yellow Page out. Use the money. You can build a kick-ass quality website.
Absolutely.
You know, for the price of a large yellow page ad.
Like, get anyone you know who has a digital camera to take pictures of your business.
Yep. And now, granted, with some of these, if you're going to do it, you got to do it right.
Yeah.
So you can't just slap it up and then ignore it. And that is an issue for some people.
But they're competing with Home Depot and Rona and Lowe's, who all have pretty killer websites that just keep getting better.
They need to have something that's going to, because again, guess what? More and more of us are using the smartphones.
And they have iPad apps as well. Like,
maybe I should go in and offer to consult for them. There you go.
Do it up.
Because, you know, they're actually a pretty good local business.
Absolutely. Yeah. I went to their physical location afterwards.
And they know their stuff.
And checked it out.
Yeah, exactly. Even some of the smaller, like Tucky's Home Hardware and that in town. Same thing. But it's true. Like, you know, I was at two businesses today. One's, I'm going to give a shout out to both of them because they were awesome and here for service. The PA Shop. And there's another place. It's a new hobby gaming store called The Game Chamber. And they both got very good social media presence. You know, I mentioned that I was going to pop down to see them both. They both replied, so looking forward to it. You know, they've never met me.
Mm-hmm.
And more importantly, the service in the store, the physical in-store, was awesome. You know, I was very impressed. And again, two examples of companies that are going after the niche. They're not going after the lowest price.
Right.
You know, necessarily, I guarantee the stuff that, you know, if I get stuff from either of those stores, they're not going to be, I could probably get it online for cheaper, but I get the service behind it.
Mm-hmm. Is the Game Chamber the one that just opened recently?
Yeah, over on Dundas Street East. Two guys. First time, I've been meaning to go in there for a while. First time I was in there, I was very impressed.
The biggest thing I've heard about them is that unlike some of the other stores in London, they actually want to see that. They're doing this because they love to game.
Yeah, they're basically two gamers at heart. They love to game. There's a bunch of new ideas. I was in talking today for about, it ended up being an hour. We ended up just talking about different things. And because they've got the whole area for the gaming room. You know, they know what works. It's the friendly local game shop. For that, people who are into that hobby will know what I'm talking about. They're even looking at, you know, they've got a lot of Euroboard games. Mm-hmm. And what they've been noticing is Will Wheaton's new show.
Tabletop.
It's driving their sales.
Yep.
So like when he mentions a game, they sell a few more the following week. So they've been kind of having those in and listing them.
Cool.
So they, you know, and again, so they're watching social media.
Mm-hmm.
Great example. They've even got a little PC right there that, you know, if you need to look up something, you're not sure, you can reference it or even order stuff online and they'll, you know, have it delivered to them for you. Stuff like that. One of the things we were talking about is I suggested that because they're going to put up a little bit more tags saying, oh, this was featured on Tabletop. I said, generate a QR code. Send it right to Board Game Geek.
Right.
So that way when you're looking on your smartphone, you know, they think that's a great idea. But small business example of they're going for the quality. Same with the PA shop. Again, I'm looking at them. We're going to be looking at upgrading some stuff here in the studio. So hopefully awesome. We'll see what happens. Yeah, mm-hmm. So hopefully we'll be able to tell more people about that. Hopefully it just means we sound a little bit more awesome and we're not banging each other with these mic booms.
Yeah, I know.
Exactly. So, all right, picks of the week. I have no pick of the week, gentlemen.
Which is shocking because you always have a pick
of the week. Well, I usually do, but if I don't see anything that's really, I don't just want to pick anything out of a hat sort of thing. So, Jameson?
Well, my pick of the week is I'll shamelessly say this. I got an iPad this past week,
You and your lovely wife.
Yes, we both. Because otherwise, I knew I wouldn't have one.
I welcome to my world.
So one of the apps I had my eye on was the 500px, which I'm glad that the App Store they allowed it back on. Which after the Vine fiasco was kind of a bit ridiculous. But it's an absolutely gorgeous app, and I like it not only because the interface is really really well done and it's very easy to interact with, but some of the photographers that have uploaded photos to that service are incredible. So it's a win-win. You can't go wrong with it. And it's very easy to just sit there and go, ooh, ooh.
Yeah, it's professional ooh. Photographer yeah. community, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, it's very good.
It's right. very good.
You mentioned you know one of the founders, or the founder.
Yeah, I used to work with him at a dating site in Toronto.
That's awesome.
For a couple of years. So
that's awesome.
We keep in touch over Twitter and everything.
Good, good, good stuff. All right, do you have a pick of the week?
Oh, yeah. Well, last week I switched my IDE. I've been using NetBeans for years because it's free and you can do PHP in it and it has autocode completion.
Okay.
But it's kind of slow and starts to grind. And some people at work convinced me to switch to Sublime Text 2.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that. It's super fast. I really like it. The code completion is not as good, even with the Sublime Code Intel plugin installed. But... it's nice just to have it zipping along. It's free to use, but you'll get a little nag screen every once in a while saying, hey, please donate. So if you pay $60, you get the full version. And if that's your, if it's your day job, you know, $60 is not bad.
Right.
I paid the 60 bucks.
Yeah.
Right. And then the day after I paid the $60, they're like, Sublime Text 3 Alpha.
Don't.
It's like, damn it.
That usually happens to me. I usually tell people, do you want a new product to be out? I'll buy the old one and then
yeah,
there you go. You know, that usually is good.
But it is awesome and it works really well and it's very fast. And there are millions of plugins to do whatever you want it to do,
cool.
whether that's pre-processing less CSS or whatever it is.
Good stuff. And you're still having a great time at rTraction?
Still having a great time there. I accidentally walked away from my computer without locking it the other day. And when I came back... my screen was covered in unicorns
and ponies and
they had installed the unicorn plugin for Chrome and I took a little while to figure out what was going on.
But again, the important thing was you weren't made to buy donuts the next day.
That's true.
That's usually what happens. So they've come up with more creative ones and you've learned a lesson now.
I have learned a lesson.
Don't walk away from your station because yes, you will end up paying for it. So exactly. Good stuff. Well, it was good to have you both back again. Now, Jameson, you're not going to be here next week.
No, I'm taking a little vacation.
You're taking a little vacation, otherwise known as your honeymoon.
Yep.
Good for you. Enjoy yourself down there. Leave all the computers at home. Leave all the computers at home. Just answer yes.
iPad doesn't
yes.
count.
iPad doesn't count.
Yeah,
because
your wife has
actually,
one as
we're
well.
we're taking our laptops so that we can play Left 4 Dead 2, and we're also going to take the Wii so that we can play Mario Kart.
You know what? I have a funny story there. One night, Jameson and I were in a Skype conversation, and I can hear his wife in the background, and she's playing Left 4 Dead. Man, does she swear? she gets right into it, doesn't she?
Oh yeah,
exactly. I wouldn't want to mess with her in real life.
She didn't look like a sailor.
No, but she swears like one. I tell you, you know, Nadia, forgive me, but there you go. And she probably kicks ass. She probably kicked my ass in game and in real life. So
oh, probably
exactly kick all of our asses. So okay, so yeah, so we're gonna have next week we're hoping to have Derek Silva actually in. From Clever Host.
Darn, I miss him.
You miss out there. We're hoping to have him in. We might get Jameson. We'll see. Maybe we'll drag you back.
No, you
as
won't
well,
get
Derek.
Me at all.
Two Derek's that could cause confusion.
Oh, that'll make it even more fun. So we'll see what happens. But anyway, so yeah, we'd like to thank you all for joining us once again. Don't forget to subscribe via iTunes, Castroller, or your favorite RSS feed.
Mm-hmm.
It does help us quite a bit. And so yeah, for episode 23rd for February the 4th, 2013, my name is Stuart Clark.
I'm Jameson Roberts.
I'm Derek Martin.
Thank you and be well.